try to get it how I live it. A lot of people counting on me, kinda like a digit. It's a cold world, I'm not fronting like it isn't. It's no time for coming up shorter than the midget. Y'all know I'ma raise the bar though, like Bridget. See there a star, go don't blink, you might miss it. It's precious cargo, you gotta be strong to lift it. The light comes in different types, be more specific. Shit, I'm Black Thought, what could be more prolific? For this love, I go above and beyond the limit. I told y'all I'm above and beyond the gimmick. I get into your head and spread like a pandemic. I never put myself in a race I can't finish. I'm well grounded, founded on the same premise.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the known world listening to my voice again. We want to thank you for joining us for another edition of Synergy. Again, this is a blend, as we said, Synergy, a blend of intellectual, political, lifestyle, consciousness, and spirituality all wrapped up together. So again, this is Keelan Hinton, and we have Joe Hill. And here, we're here, again, to just talk about provocative, to talk about the mind-blowing, to talk about things, to talk about how spirituality intertwines with intellect, community, lifestyle, and everything else in between.
That's what we should just call the show, Earthing.
Yeah.
Earthing.
Exactly.
Good morning. It's, this is Earthing.
So this is just a hodgepodge of right. thoughts, feelings, emotions that spanned, I mean, again, everywhere. And we're trying to see how consciousness, spirituality, and things like that sort of, where do those things intersect? Okay. We thank you for joining us again. For those that may listen to this podcast, which is soon to become, soon we'll hit the airwaves soon, probably in the next month or so. We'll try to get a time. But for those that listen to this as a podcast, you can email us any questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas at synergykhjh@gmail.com. That's synergykhjh@gmail.com. That's synergykhjh@gmail.com. Okay? Again, as we always say, none of the comments, suggestions, ideas, or perspectives are supported by Marshall University, are supported by any of its employees, any of its sponsors, affiliates, or supporters. None of the comments, suggestions, ideas, or anything you hear on this show are supported by WMUL, by any of its employees, supporters, endorsers, or anyone at all. Okay, these are the sole perspectives, ideas of myself, Keelan Hinton, and Joe Hill. So, as we always say, take this advice at your own risk. And that's a horrible way right. to start any show or podcast, but
full disclaimer, we just talking.
Yeah.
We just talking.
Exactly. So here we are again, as we said before, let's rock and roll. So, we was just talking a second ago, and we said we better turn these mics on before we lose.
Yeah.
Before we lose magic.
Yeah.
And a part of what we was talking about was the idea of feeling energy.
Yeah.
And how feeling energy, or the ability to feel energy, or a person's ability to be aware of the energy that is around them, how it can guide and dictate what you do, who you are, and how you speak to people.
Right.
How you interact in the world. My question to you before we got, my question was going to be before we got on, how do you know if that energy is real that you feel, or it's not just fear, not just some fear or some bias or some sort of something in you? I dated a young lady a long time ago. I don't know why anybody would leave me, but she left me. I'm wonderful in my own eyes.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
But take that advice at your own. All right, go.
But she said something happened, and she said something like, the Lord told me to come over here.
Huh.
And I was like, no, that wasn't the Lord. That's you insecure.
Right.
Because nothing was going on, and nothing was happening.
Yeah.
But she was like, she had this internal feeling.
She was watering the bushes, and a bush just caught on fire and told her to.
Magically.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Now, my question is, and nothing was happening. I was that time. Yeah. I wasn't doing anything. Yeah, I've grown and evolved, people listening. But that time I wasn't doing anything. But my question is, I find that interesting. How do we know? How do people know when that feeling or that tug on your spirit or your consciousness is real? And how do you separate that from insecurities?
Yeah, or your own desires or impulses. I feel like versus something other than me is compelling me or tugging me. Or I think your question, it's not quite the answer, but I think the question acknowledges the fact that when you get into the idea of spirituality and even religion, as codified as certain things may be in religion, anytime you're dealing with the idea of relating to, connecting with, let's say, the divine or the energy of the universe, whatever suits you, whatever makes you feel good, whatever works for you. I want you to get hung up on that part. But anytime you're dealing with that, there is the the risk or the reality of the possibility that personal subjectivity comes into play. And so, yeah, how do you know the difference between the two? And I've got to work backwards in my own mind, because I feel like at this space, I feel pretty clear about that. And what really starts to twist your head is, after a while, shouldn't the two begin to come into sync anyway? But let's back up. How do you know? How do you know? I think a lot of times it's trial and error, to the point that sometimes in life you think, oh, the universe or God or the eternal energy is telling me to do something, and you do it, and once it flops or you see the trouble it causes, you go, huh.
I wonder if the less self-aware you are, the more you start to feel like it's something divine. It's kind of like before we knew what we knew about science, God did everything.
Yeah, well, yeah, yeah.
And it was, the split between science and religion is interesting to me, because that's why the first scientists became scientists, because right. They wanted to better understand God.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's like, but back in the day, it was kind of like we didn't understand how the earth rotated. So it's like every time this moon came up, like Jewish people, if you research it, used to worship the moon.
Yeah,
it like the moon would come up in between these two mountains.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying.
Well, so many of the names, the ancient names attached to God in Israel's, you know, primitive development were attached to the mountain, a god of the mountains in one way or the other. Even their enemies thought this is the god of the mountains.
Yeah, so they
if we fight you in the valley, we got a shot. But no, yeah, so
yeah, they used to call it sign, and then. In Arabic, the designation for mountains was AI, and that's where we got Mount Sinai.
Yeah, okay.
But it's like, but we thought that was a god. We thought that was a god or a goddess. You know what I'm saying? Like,
things and huge.
As we got more sophisticated in science, we started to understand. Oh, well, the Earth is just rotating.
It's a giant rock. Yeah.
But I'm saying, I wonder if the more you understand about your identity, the more you know about who you are, the more self-aware you become. I wonder, does that put us in a position to know, am I really feeling something? And oh, this is just me right now.
Oh, definitely. Like, I think the more self-aware you are, yeah, you definitely. And when you say self-aware, we didn't get into this too much last time. We touched on that at metacognition. But the more you are paying attention to how you think and your habits of thought and your habits of emotional reaction, oh, definitely. You can sort what's coming from you and what is what the artist typically referred to as inspiration.
Yeah.
Inspiration can come in very mundane places in your life, where it may tell you what folks in recovery would call the moment of clarity.
Yeah.
These are things that I think the more self-aware you are, because you can be more aware of what is coming out of you when it's, you can sense when an idea or a feeling isn't original to you. in the sense that you kind of go, where did that come from? One reason Keelan and I started recording was we were just talking. And when we talk, as we're thinking together and talking together, things start coming out of mouths and we go, oh, hey, that's it's like, as I heard it, as I heard it come out of my mouth, I could identify it as something that was, what's the word? I think we need to talk about in the terms of something that's alive.
Yeah.
It feels like something that carries the energy that inspires the conversation.
Yeah.
It carries an energy that invites response.
Yeah.
And we're grasping at words to talk about things that are somewhat abstract, but yet real. But yeah, when you are self-aware and when you are someone who in your spirituality practices a sense of stillness.
Yeah.
So that you don't move out of anxiety or whatever. When something comes up in your spirit or comes up in your mind or comes out of your mouth, you know whether or not that is, even if it's not, oh, that's not for me, but you know whether or not it is a thing that, I don't know, that life-giving may be too dramatic, but that what's the word? That sparks something.
Yeah.
You know, the best, we're taking detours now, but some of the best, I was going to say rappers, but I even say musicians, but I think especially rappers, the ones that I most appreciate are the ones that say things that hit my soul.
Yeah.
And best things I enjoy reading are things that evoke a response in me.
Yeah.
And those things, I think, are more spirit. I don't think it has to be a uniquely original, never before thought, ever said thing. It's mm-hmm. a question whether or not the thing feeds something or inspires something in you that is generative.
Yeah.
So as a professor, for example, ideally, and I know this is your intent, when you are lecturing, you want to inspire a thought, not just have them memorize what you said.
Yeah.
But you want them to take in what you said and have that inspire in them a thought that adds to the mental conversation, at least, or as we might say, adds to the academic corpus.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I write my paper, you read my paper, you get inspired, you write something that builds off of it or goes in some other direction, but it builds something. Yeah. Something that builds, that grows, that's life-giving. I think of all those in the same mood.
Yeah.
So as I'm talking it through, I don't think it has to be a uniquely original, never before said or trademarked thing. It's just a question whether or not when that thing is spoken or read or an act observed, does it inspire something progressive, something creative in the person that witnesses it, hears it, reads it.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder how much of, again, I'm stuck on this idea of, because again, we was talking about connecting when we speak, when we interact with people, when we speak, when we're both working.
Yeah.
How the energy in the room, and I know that seems mystical,
yeah,
to a lot of people, to a lot of, like, this idea of energy and feeling energy is for us a very real thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And my question is, why is that a real thing for us and not for some?
Yeah.
And I wonder how our perspectives and philosophies, like my perspective and philosophy on life and people and consciousness,
yeah,
and whatever consciousness is to me and spirituality and what it is to me, like that informs, I think, I wonder, because I have that foundation, does that open me up to that possibility of feeling whatever it is that I think that I feel when I step into a room,
yeah,
and get ready to speak? Like, I don't feel like life is something, like life and consciousness is something that is just happening outside of me, that is external to me.
Right, right.
Like whatever it is in me. Yeah. It's happening externally, it is in me.
Yeah.
And whatever life and consciousness is, I feel like we're connected to each other, and we're connected to everything around us. And because that is my perspective, I wonder if holding that perspective allows me and opens up that channel for me to connect to, for me, it, from my perspective. And, and what's important is this. I don't think it matters that I'm wrong. What matters is that it informs the way that I interact in the world. It's just like if you go home and your partner says there's a dragon in the living room. And you like, are you high? Ain't no dragon in the living room. But it don't matter if it's real. What matters is he or she believes that it's real. And because they believe it's real, it is informing how they think about the world. So you got to come home and you have to deal with the world from that perspective.
But now connect that then. So if whether you're right or wrong, like I said, it informs how you function. So I guess the maybe then right or wrong isn't the question. Or maybe right or wrong is answered by this question. When what you feel informs how you act, and you find that how you act in turn has a positive impact on the world you're acting upon.
Okay.
Now that may or may not make it true or false, but it answers the question: does it work? Does it help? I don't know. I wonder if we get too hung up on is it right? Is it wrong? Is it true? Is it whatever? Does it work? Does it work for you? And then as you look at the larger testimony of thousands of years of human activity grounded in spirituality. And look at that positive effect. When that spirituality, and let's even say religion or consciousness, is one that is geared toward people's well-being. Because I guess spirituality, consciousness, religion feeds war as much as anything. But
good point.
Unfortunately. But even in those cases, you got me meandering again, but to finish that thought out, even in cases where it is the excuse for or the driver of violence, even then in the back of that mind, and it's usually a mind, even if there's a collective working, there's some human mind driving it, even in those minds they are still trying to justify what they do. So even if what they're doing out of religion, consciousness, spirituality is measurably, qualitatively harming folks, evil, in their minds, I can't. There may be exceptions, but as I think back over my admittedly limited knowledge of history, the person is still trying to convince you they're doing something good. They're still trying to somehow rationalize from a good, righteous image of divinity, whatever it may be, and somehow getting from that to a distorted justification of whatever they're doing. So even in those cases, there's still this awareness of a need to be able to define the thing as good. And so to think about good then, not in these violent rationalizations, but just, did it help somebody? Did it help shape somebody? Did it help somebody feel like they counted when they didn't, that they mattered when they didn't, that did it help them grow into somebody, or in some small way inspire them to think of something that helps somebody? That's why I say life-giving, not just does it make a heartbeat, but the general life of the whole creation, the humanity or the whole creation, if it in some way helps that to progress, to nurture, to get stable.
So hold on, so now are we defining what is good and what is moral?
Well, I think we're venturing toward that because we're coming back from how do you know it's real? And we departed from real to, I don't know if it's real or not, if it's true or not, in my own mind, but does it work for me?
Does it matter if it's real or not? If it serves me in some way.
If it serves you, and if you find that it is serving in a positive way the world in which you're acting, the people with whom you are acting.
Does it have to be a positive way?
I guess even if it's negative, it's still real.
That's what I'm saying.
You got a good point.
If it's serving me in some way, you know what I'm saying? Then I think the energy is real, and it doesn't matter if it's not. It's still helping me with my cult. It's still helping me with
right, right, But beyond that, still though, I think there is, people talk about being intuitive or having a gut feeling that comes from somewhere. And a lot of the things that I've read on human development would say that ability or that gift or whatever it is, or that delusion, let's allow it.
Yeah.
It's something you would have picked up early in life. For some reason, life taught you that to navigate this world safely, I've got to have a feel for my environment, of whether or not I feel things are safe or good, whether it's for myself or from concern about the folks around me. Life either teaches you to pay attention to or not pay attention to. How is everybody? Not happy, sad, but just what is the mood around me? Animals
for
do
survival
that.
Purposes.
Animals do that.
Yeah.
Could you track that down if you could to enough complex neurological interactions in your mind and in all that nervous system that works through your whole intestinal system, your digestive system, to go, oh, it's all just neurological? I don't know. Maybe you could.
Yeah.
But it seems, I don't know. How could I? I mean, is it possible that somehow in my evolutionary genius, I'm processing every verbal, nonverbal cue in the room and somehow just didn't know I was and I just get a feeling?
Yeah.
Or do I just feel something? I mean, I'll allow it. Maybe it is all just neurological.
Yeah.
I don't believe that, but I'll allow the possibility if we could talk that through. But if it works for you,
yeah,
it's real. If I keep feeling the vibe in the room and I keep calling it right, or if I feel like there's a weird vibe in the room and you find out 2 days later, oh, that's what was going on. So-and-so was mad at this other person. I felt something. You know, you said, I felt like something was off. Everybody says that. I felt like something was off. And you find out later it was, in fact, off.
Yeah.
Or when the mood is good in the room and, like, you're teaching and you're like, oh, Lord, everybody's listening. Why? I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
And you find yourself in the engagement of that, carrying what you're trying to present with a different energy and a different passion.
Yeah.
Maybe the energy, just talking all possibilities. What if it's just the energy that we share and we're sensitive to when that energy, that wavelength, that frequency is off in one another and when it's working? Yeah. I don't know.
I think it's a combination of both. I think there are times, I know there are times that we think we're feeling something and it's just etched in our genes.
Oh,
to some degree.
Yeah.
To read facial cues, body expressions. There's certain things that we're reading in our environment that we don't know that we're reading.
Yeah.
That I just think are just primitively there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And then I think that there's an entirely different layer.
Yeah.
I think the issue is whatever consciousness is, I think that we think that there's a separation between physical and consciousness. And I think that it's so intertwined and also intermeshed. I think it's all the same.
Oh, I agree.
We think, but you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I think that is the issue. Like, we're trying to separate and tease things apart and separate physical stuff from spiritual stuff, from consciousness or whatever. And I think that you can't. I wonder if you can. I just think it's all so intertwined and intermeshed that we don't know. That's why I think a part of it is we don't have the language.
No, we
culturally don't think about things like that here.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we don't think about things that way. We don't have the language to even explain.
Yeah.
Sometimes what is happening.
Yeah.
When we feel certain things.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
And could that be part of the mental health, emotional health epidemic that we continue to think about ourselves and function as if these are two separate things, that we're not, you know, let's talk about, holistic health, et cetera, but we don't really think about those the same. Dr. John Kinney, I was listening to him talk once, and he was talking about the idea of shalom and in Hebrew thought and connecting that back to the story of Adam and Eve. Again, true or false? Fiction or what, we're not going to have that debate on here. But the truth in what he's saying is valid for human experience currently. The idea that the great consequence of the sin in the garden was this schism of self.
Yeah.
The physical self from the soul.
Yeah.
And that even now in religion, we still tend to wrestle with this. A religion doesn't do well with the flesh. It still wants to make a dichotomy between the soul, that's the good you, and the flesh, that's all this evil stuff. But if God made them both, the idea that what's supposed to happen, and again, you bring some Judeo-Christian thought, but you can take it from whichever you want to. But what's supposed to happen in the healing of humanity is for not to dominate or cast out everything the flesh wants to do, but to bring these two parts of ourselves back into an integrated whole.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, when we talk about the evils of the flesh, your body don't want to do nothing that you ain't taught it to do.
Yeah.
whether it's overeating or drugs or whatever it is, your body doesn't really have an opinion. It just learns certain neurological patterns, and it knows what makes its endorphins pop when you consciously decide you want to do something.
Yeah.
But the idea then, that there should be a integrated wholeness between consciousness, spirituality, and the body, and the physical world, the concrete, that this thing we keep calling abstract really isn't abstract.
Yeah.
And yet we don't have the language to speak about it. I don't think we have the language to speak about it in a very effective way in terms of concrete terms. We tend to easily drift off into abstract things. I think it's supposed to be an integrated. How else could you be an integrated self?
A lot of spiritual perspectives and religions, to some degree or another, talk about this notion, the basic notion or idea of manifesting reality.
Yeah.
To some degree.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why you can't.
Huh.
It's because you don't see things like we don't see things as an integrate, like intertwined and intermeshed. It's so separate. Things are so separate.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That is why you can't speak, like that's why you can't. When people talk about energy and they talk about manifesting what they want, maybe that's why you can't.
Speaking it's because your car of the way being.
because of the way you think about, like, because of the way you experience, because of the way you think about and experience consciousness. You experience consciousness or spirituality, whatever you want to call it, something separate from the physical. And because you experience it and think about it that way, how can you speak? How can you speak things into your reality? If you truly do not see them as things, things that are intermeshed.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And that's what I think sometimes. Well, I think sometimes people give the devil too much credit.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that's a whole different show. Yeah.
And I think that sometimes if there is something larger than ourselves.
Yeah.
This is what I personally believe. I think that a lot of times when people pray.
Yeah.
I don't think, and something happens.
Right.
I don't believe that if it just, and then I'm saying this for the sake of anybody who may be listening. If there is something larger than us, okay, I don't necessarily believe.
There's too much lean on this chair.
Yeah. I don't necessarily believe that whatever it is, it's doing it. I think that sometimes we get into these high emotional states.
Yeah.
That we slide into this space.
Yeah.
That we join our will and consciousness, and we literally, like, you pray for somebody, you literally speak and make it happen.
Right. Right. No.
And,
yeah. I think.
And I'm not saying there isn't some. I'm not saying there is or isn't. I'm not saying there isn't some God somewhere that you can't pray to. They won't.
Yeah.
I'm saying I think a lot of times it's you. I think a lot of times when people get there, I think there is something to. Stanford years ago did the mass consciousness studies. Anybody out there that may end up, look up the mass consciousness studies, where they got people of all different types of faiths together to pray about hurricanes or about this or about that. And they tried to get proof of, could, you know what I'm saying? Like, I think there is something to gathering people together to focus on one thing collectively.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I think that is one of a myriad of benefits to gathering, going to a synagogue, going to a church.
Yeah.
Or whatever, you know what I'm saying? And I think that so many things that people want, they don't get, because, again, we're taught to view these things as separate entities. You know what I'm
right.
saying? It's what we didn't understand about the Egyptians. Like we thought that Africans worshiped idol gods.
Right.
And a part of what, like when you saw a man's body in a dog's head, or a woman with eagle wings, or they believed in one God, but they just thought your spirit had different parts and pieces.
Yeah.
And those were, that's a physical manifestation of a part or a piece of your
right.
spirit that does something specifically. So like we see things as separate. We don't understand how very complex a lot of other cultures were, and the way that they thought about consciousness, and the way they thought about spirituality, and the way that they thought,
yeah,
you know, all these things were sort of separate but intertwined and connected to each other. You know,
yeah.
like the Kabbalic tree of life came from the Egyptian, like that's a whole other show for another day.
Yeah.
But just like when you look at the Kabbalic tree of life,
yeah.
like you got all these spheres, but they're all connected in some way, shape, form, or fashion. Like we don't understand how you got eyes, you got a nose, and you got a mouth. You got three separate parts that all do different things, but they're
right.
all part of one face.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't understand this concept of how things can be separate, but they can be interconnected and they can be together.
Well, it makes me think then about this labeling of something as primitive. Is that not in some way closer to what we're talking about? Because as societies advance, they tend to advance almost exclusively intellectually.
Yeah.
And so we get smarter, and we learn new things, and we learn new tricks to manipulate things. And I wonder if there's some, well, I feel like there is some self-deception in thinking of something as primitive versus advanced, at least when you get into consciousness and spirituality, because we as we got more tools to play with, and as we developed higher ways of thinking intellectually, that's really where we banked our whole sense of advancing and progressing as a race, was how big our brains could get,
yeah,
and what our brains could do.
I think that is the flaw. I mean, cut you off, but
yeah.
I think that is the flaw.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah,
of man though, is I think we believe that
yeah.
we are more advanced.
Yeah, yeah, like, I think it's a self deception.
We still can't figure out how they built the pyramids.
Yeah, yeah,
and because we can't figure it out, obviously aliens did it.
Right, it must have been aliens. Yeah,
because we can't
yeah.
figure it out. Like,
right.
so it's like I think that. Like nothing, like as it that's why I tell my students all the time, don't let your iPhone and your car fool you.
Yeah,
like this fools us into believing that we're advanced.
Yeah,
like there is a primitive and we're more advanced. We ask this, well, like I said, like I told you before, we asking the same questions and
yeah.
dealing with the same problems
yeah.
that your mama and your grandmama did and her
right.
grandmama did, and they did 100 years ago and they did
yeah.
1,000 years ago. We still trying to figure out what is God and why am I here
right.
and what is love.
Yeah,
so it's like. Nothing has changed. You just get around. You just get
right.
around a little faster because they was riding in horse and buggy.
And we don't do things any better. We don't take care of ourselves any better. We know more about
we
what
don't.
We ought to do. I know good and well I shouldn't have had that son of Baconator on my way down from Charleston. But knowing more has made us feel like, oh, we are, I don't know, better, smarter, whatever. And yet we know so much we ought to do. Students know they should come to class. Students know there's a book in front of them with everything they need to pass the class and get an A, but they don't study it. We know what we should do to our bodies, but we don't do it. We know what makes for good relationships, but we opt for, I don't know, stupid things.
Yeah.
But I don't want to lose the last thing you said, because I think there's a pickup of this even in Christian theology that we don't think of a lot, the idea of prayer and what you move.
Yeah.
As you are engaged with whatever we want to call the spirit, as opposed to calling on the spirit from on high to do something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jesus talks about the idea, as outlandish as it is, of speaking to the mountain and that the mountain will move. He says, have faith in God and you can speak to mountains. He doesn't say have faith in God and you can ask God to move the mountain. He's saying that there's something you get in touch with.
Yeah.
That as you speak it, as you voice it, as you exert whatever's in you, in union with whatever this larger force is, that you can move things.
Yeah.
I think about that because typically prayer is just we ask God to go do something.
Yeah.
And I wonder if our own feet, symbolically speaking, are grounded in this foundation of whatever moves creation. Taking more thought, the idea that what happens if we move, by word or by action or just by just, you know, prayer of heart, that possibility.
That's why my favorite verse is prayer without works is dead.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you have to get up, you have to do something.
Yeah, yeah.
And this has been my philosophy. And again, for the sake of the audience, again, if there is something larger than us,
yeah,
okay, whatever it is that has put us here, I don't believe that it will put us here to beg.
No, no.
I don't believe, this is just my personal belief.
Yeah.
I don't believe that it's like when my son grows up,
yeah,
I'm not letting him out of my house until he has all the tools that he needs to survive.
Right, right.
Now, whether he uses them or
that's
not.
That's on him, yeah.
That's on him.
Yeah.
But don't say that I let you out of this house and I didn't give you everything that you need to, not just to survive, but to thrive.
To thrive,
now, whether you was listening to me, whether you hear me every night again, you stop by the house and I give you advice when you need it, when you ask
anytime.
For
it. Anytime, yeah.
Whether you, you know, and I don't, and I think that as people, we spend, and this is, again, my personal opinion, we spend far too much time asking and begging for something outside of us to fix stuff for us.
Yeah.
When we're, and I tell people all the time, that's why your little prayers never get answered.
Uh-huh.
If my son came to me right now and asked me to tie his shoes, I'm going to say, do it yourself. I'm not going to do something for you that you can do for yourself.
Right.
And I tell people all the time, maybe that's why whatever it is that you're meditating on, whatever it is you're praying on, whatever it is you're trying to get in touch with, it's not answering, because whatever you're trying to connect to is saying, look, I already gave you all you need. You need to figure out how to use what I gave you.
Yeah.
So I think that there is something. I think that we are more powerful than we think we are.
Oh, definitely.
Now, whether we learn,
whether
society teaches you how to use that or how to manifest that, you know what I'm saying, is an entirely different thing. And now I'm thinking about people that we label as witches. Or I'm thinking about what we call voodoo or hoodoo.
Uh-huh.
Why those things looked at so negatively.
Yeah.
Like, I think that those are a group of people who are trying to manifest. They're trying to use tools that are here to try to manifest the reality in some way, shape, form, or fashion.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Like, I wonder, why do we view that as such an evil thing?
Yeah.
Why is that such a bad thing? And is it bad because you're trying to do it yourself and you're not calling on something outside of you to do it?
Yeah.
Or what? Maybe that's what it is. I'm just running my mouth. I'm just thinking. But
well, I think it's part of it. I think, and again, this goes into some of the religious idea behind it. But yeah, but it picks up two things simultaneously. It suggests then, for better or for worse, and this goes back to your good or bad or you know, what does it matter if it's good or bad? The fact that whether this comes from God or human beings, the fact that there was such a serious concern about it, even in religious scripture, would kind of make you think it must have been a real thing.
Yeah.
So was it or is it possible to be in touch with those things or to know some means we figured out along the way, anciently, primitively, quote unquote, to actually manipulate how this energy, how these rules, how these laws work, and that somehow violates how it's supposed to work, that you are, I think in terms even now with religion, are you imposing your will on the flow of things, so to speak, or are you moving with it? Are you forcing something to happen by whatever means you figured out?
Yeah.
Or are you trying to get in touch with the move of how that energy wants to move, and then you're going with it? I find when you do that, things fall into place that you need to think to pray about. But not that you get brand new cars, but you know, things, you know.
But I wonder if there's
something legitimate to that, though, that there is a way to be in touch with that energy, consciously, unconsciously, directly. I think there is. I think a lot of times when we get tied up in this idea of, you know, speaking things into reality, just to be honest, sometimes folks are speaking foolishness in terms of where they're at. For example, I'm going to speak a new car into being, and I'm going to keep speaking it. I'm going to quit keep speaking it, but I'm not putting in the hours at work to get the overtime.
Yeah.
I didn't even have a job.
Yeah.
You know, and when people try to help us, oh, that's all right. That's all right. I'm waiting on my change. Fool, that was your change.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it but yeah, I think we can, yeah. Yeah. I think there's a lot to be said about, the possibility, because I think a lot about prayer. Not just praying, but thinking about how it works. You know, I've been in situations where I've prayed for people that shouldn't have got better. I thought from my assessment.
Yeah.
We're in the ICU and this person got all kind of stuff hooked up to them. They're just barely breathing. And I'm praying, half thinking, I don't know if this is worth praying for. And they get better. I have prayed fervently for folks, you know, young man in a car wreck, new family. I'm praying as hard as I can for God to do something there. Nothing happened.
Yeah.
In my own life, I've had times where things should have gone bad and didn't go bad, and I hadn't prayed at all ahead of time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so you try to take all of the experience into account to try to figure it out. But I do think that there's something to be said for what your spirit, along with that larger spirit, can exert upon the rest of reality. Not from afar on reality, but the visible reality. I think there really is something to that. And I think there may be more to that than calling on high for God to do something. Like you said, God saying, you know how to tie your shoes?
Yeah.
I would love to see you do it.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to hold that paternal idea, not God as a watchmaker, even if it's this paternal idea of God, any good parent, now I'm getting in trouble, here we go. I would think any good parent wants, for the most part, not to have a child they always get to take care of, but a child they get to watch learn how to walk, work, do things for themselves,
yeah,
achieve, discover what they can be. And I think of God or that spirit that same way, not just a God that wants to be your maidservant or your ATM the rest of your life. I'm equipping you, allowing you the possibility to be in touch with this energy. I'd love for you to find out what you can do and how much you actually matter in the whole sphere of reality. I'd love to see you figure that out.
Yeah.
So no, I'm not going to keep answering prayers from out here. You can move some things for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, if we walk outside and Keelan falls, I say, oh Lord, please help Keelan up. God's like, are you kidding me? Just pick him up.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, I think there's definitely, and I wish we could, I wish people would speak more about the possibility without it sounding so weird and heretical.
Yeah.
that you can, not because you're God. But yeah, if we want to play in this idea, there's something of God in us. That means we are in touch with the same spirit, the same power, whatever you want to call that energy. And you should be able to connect with it and influence it in some way as it influences you. Or if you're really, really in touch with that flow, you can move in ways in which things seem to just fall into place. But it's not just, oh, lucky me. But you try to be in the right place at the right time to line up with whatever's already trying to happen.
For all of that to happen, though, I think that's where consciousness comes in.
Yeah.
To me, consciousness is a person's level of awareness.
Yeah.
Your level of, like, the level of awareness you have with yourself and the level of awareness that you have with reality,
the whole
that's
world
happening
around you.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I think when I hear people talk about higher levels, and maybe this is us fleshing out the difference between physical stuff, what is consciousness, and then what is spirituality?
Yeah.
Consciousness to me is awareness. How aware you are and in touch with who you are, your feelings, your identity, how and where you are with who and what you are internally. Maybe who and what you are internally is spiritual.
Yeah.
And when people talk about higher levels of consciousness, the more you understand, the more of the nuances that you are allowed to see and detect of your external environment,
yeah,
and people around you,
yeah,
I think that is how we sort of define having high levels of, like, people who have high levels of consciousness are,
yeah,
probably more nuanced in the way that they experience the world, the,
yeah,
way they experience people around them.
Yeah, I think
their,
so. Yeah.
Their proprioception is my awareness of my body parts.
Yeah.
I don't have to see my hand to know it's behind my,
right,
back.
Right.
And I wondered, like, consciousness is, again, this awareness,
yeah,
of where I am in space, how I interact with other people, how other people interact with me. Like, and just sort of the nuances of everything that's going on around me that other people may not be aware of.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I think that having the higher your level of consciousness, I think in having high levels of consciousness, being more aware of the nuances of the world.
Yeah.
And not just physical nuances.
Right.
You know
right.
what I'm saying? The more aware you are of those things, I think it puts you in a space and a place to be able to activate some of these things that we're talking about.
I think so, yeah. And we talk, some people say being in the moment or mindfulness. But yeah, I think the and maybe in as you're talking, maybe we're working toward a better framework for all the things we're talking about, that to some degree, the way we're talking about it, consciousness is kind of this, maybe bridge isn't the best word. I want a better word. But a bridge between spirituality and
like
and the physical.
I like that.
Yeah, I feel like there's a better word for that still, but it's a bridge. Maybe that's the space in our own self where we have to work it. And I think you do have to work at. It becomes more natural to you, but we work at integrating these things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, that is what allows us to do what we call feel energy.
Yeah.
When we walk into a room.
Yeah.
Because we're aware of nuances, physical nuances, as well as something else.
Yeah.
I think it's a combination of the two.
Well, I think if you play with the idea, like we said, when your hands behind your back, you don't feel your hand behind your back. You just know it's you know it's back. You don't
just know it's there.
It doesn't itch, tickle, nothing else. That's where it is. That's where it is. Now that's easy enough to capture, even in a limited way, because we understand the closed system of the body, how the energy moves. It's electricity. We get that.
Yeah.
But yet we also acknowledge scientifically that the whole atmosphere around us is permeated with energy.
Yeah.
All up and down that spectrum.
Yeah.
And permeates us. That's just scientific fact.
Yeah.
Before you get into wanting to call it spirit or anything else. So if I can be aware of in my closed system of energy where my feet, hands are, how they feel, why can't you allow then that same energy sensitive system can pick up on what energy's doing outside of the closed system?
Yeah.
Because it's energy. It's not matter. It doesn't have to get through my skin physically.
Yeah.
It permeates everything. That's why folks get cancer.
Yeah, exactly.
You want to talk about how a radiation energy versus emotional energy may affect somebody's body. That's a whole different show.
Yeah.
But if this energy can permeate and we're okay with that, we all sign off when science tells us that, then why can't we then be sensitive to the energy that's in somebody else? Why can't I sense somebody's back here before I know somebody's back here?
Because you're not God.
Yeah.
You're a mere mortal. And it scares us.
Yeah.
I truly believe that it scares us when people say they themselves personally can feel this.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, who are you supposed to be then?
Right.
Who are you trying to say you are?
Yeah, yeah.
You're like, and I can't, so what makes you special?
Well, maybe
and most people can't, so...
I think you can. You just don't want to.
Yeah, and
I don't think I'm better than you. I think you're as good as I am. I just don't know why you don't think so.
I wonder if there is a value, and this is probably there are a myriad of things, but this is one of the reasons why I've always had a profound and a deep respect for you is that you always speak life into people, and you're always trying to sort of activate the power within people.
Yeah.
Like you're
yeah.
never telling people like I am all powerful and you
right.
come to me when you have answers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Come see me. Yeah.
and that is I think that there has been it has been useful.
Yeah.
Like I don't know if we teach I don't know of a there are philosophies that are out there, but I don't know if any of the major philosophies teach people that like, come here and let me show you how to activate
mm-hmm.
the little G God within you. You know what I'm saying? Because
yeah.
people wouldn't keep coming back.
Well, they don't. I think, I really do think as I study, you know, the life of Jesus. I'm sorry I'm talking about Jesus too much. But that's what I studied. That's what I spent so much time to figure out or try to, or realize I don't know anything about. But when I think about Jesus talking about being the way, I think he's talking about the life he lives. I think his whole point is, how do you activate this? How do you engage with it? I think everything he's teaching us to do, the way he's challenging us to function in relation to one another, that's all he talks about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the church piles a bunch of stuff on top as far as rules and regulations, but Jesus is always teaching about how we're supposed to relate and engage with each other and how we can have the possibility of relating and engaging with God. And I think that's exactly what he's trying to teach. It's gotten very, very lost. It's gotten lost behind just, he died for our sins. We're done. Okay. But I think Jesus, and you could take that to other religions, whether it's Buddha or, you know, great teachers in other religions didn't found religions, mm-hmm. but great teachers in any religion, most of them are talking about practicing a way of life that isn't just you keep these rules, you won't get in trouble, but just this is the way to function and engage with the universe in a way that is relational, that is a real communion.
Yeah,
I think that. But now, when you say what you say, I don't hear a lot of folks in the modern setting talking about that. You really don't hear that. But I think when he talks about the way, I think more than anything else, what's gotten lost is the fact that he's saying, I don't want you just to believe in me. I want you to trust me enough to actually try and live like this, because it's a little bit stupid in a dog-eat-dog world.
Yeah.
To live in a way where I love other people and I decide that I'm going to keep a certain character that is loving, caring, life-giving, even in life-endangering situations, that I'm not going to stop being that.
Yeah.
So you'd have to trust him enough at least to give it a try, because it seems kind of crazy, almost suicidal, to really be that vulnerable in a very dangerous world, which was just as dangerous back then. They might have killed a man, so it's no worse now.
But I
think really, if you pay attention to some of the teachers, the problem is we tend to look at the teachers in religion down through the years, and we tend to just elevate them and magnify them and glorify them. We think that then we've done our job.
Yeah.
When they had something to teach you about how to function in this world that you never pay attention to, that's harder. Let me just give you props, and I'll put up a manger scene and a Christmas tree.
Yeah.
I ain't feed nobody this year, but I put a manger on my tree. Anyway, we're getting on a tangent. But no, I think that the greatest religious minds, spiritual minds, across disciplines, have in fact tried to teach that. I just think we to some degree, humanity does not wish to be empowered. Because if you would come tie my shoes, that's cool with me. I'm 44 years old. And to this day, if someone wanted to come tie my shoes, I probably wouldn't stop them. And I just feel like because we've made such a commodity of religion, not just Christianity, we've made such a commodity of it. Essentially, what we have taught our churches, well, you know, whatever our ecclesial or institutional religious bodies are, we have taught those people and taught the leaders, your job is, in fact, to go tie everybody's shoes. Yeah. Or, I heard a good sermon about tying shoes today, so I feel better about myself. I still ain't tying my shoes. But somehow, back to the intellectual part, because I know now how to do it,
yeah,
I feel like I got it. Your shoes still untied, though. Yeah, but I know how to do it. But you going to tie it? No, I'm good. But if I need to, I know how to tie it. I'm going to tie it right before the rapture.
Is that unique to hear?
I don't know. I guess I can't say that it is or isn't. I will confess I've not spent enough time traveling the world to assess everybody.
This is what I mean. Like,
so you mean is it Western civilization or Appalachian civilization or when you say here, you talking about Marshall?
No, just American. Western religions and Western philosophies.
That's what I know. I don't want to necessarily say it's only here.
That's what I mean when I say, I think that for me, I think the trick to spirituality is, I think that there's truth in a lot of them.
Yeah.
You just gotta. I heard a dude say it's like chicken. Black dude talking about chicken, but
yeah.
It's like chicken. You eat the meat and throw away the bones.
You
like I said, you take the parts and pieces that you like.
Yeah.
And you throw the rest away.
Yeah.
So, just like I was talking about Islam,
mm-hmm. Beautiful religion.
Beautiful
tradition.
Nobody can tell me that there isn't, that is a practicing religion.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot be a crap Muslim. There's certain foods you can't eat. There's certain ways to dress. There's so many times you got to pray.
Yeah.
Like, it is a practicing religion that you have to practice and do certain things. It is a daily life. Like, if, it is a daily lifestyle.
If you are keeping it real, that is hardcore devotion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which in no way requires war.
Yeah.
Or violent actions.
Yeah.
You may disagree with some of the things, but the idea of devotion and the idea of charity is a very big part of it as well.
Yeah.
You can't dismiss those. You can't dismiss those.
Yeah.
And you will find those particular parts, I think, to be fairly universal.
I just wonder when spirituality or religion is made to be a part of a daily lifestyle.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Is that very different? Just how is that different than say Western religion? You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what I think about a lot of times.
Yeah, I think that, for some reason, I'd say Western religion, and I'd like to make it broader. I don't want to pick on anybody necessarily. But I think that expression of religion we often see in Western civilization, there you go, has more to do with obtaining a commodity called religion or called salvation or called whatever status it is you think you're getting.
Yeah.
I do a certain number of things and I obtain a status. And once I've got that status, I'm just good.
Yeah.
And I'm not asking myself, how do I integrate this as a daily thing?
Yeah.
Which is what it was always meant to be about. Even Judaism, for all the fuss and people may do about all the rules and regulations and the weirdness that they read about, without doing a value judgment on any of the things, it was still all about, here's what it's like every day to live with this God actually being a God who's real in your life.
Yeah.
It's not even enough that you can see my pillar fire over here right outside the camp. You can't just kick back on your lawn chair and say, man, this is great. God's right there. It's about what does it take to stay in tune with and touch with this spirit, this power, this divinity, this divine force? What does it take to stay in the flow of that?
It feels like none of those things are a part of the philosophy of the philosophy of America.
Mm-mm.
And our society. Like, we live in a capitalistic society, so it just seems like we're very individualistic, we're very materialistic, and we're very competitive. And none of those things, I think, promote communion.
No.
Promote spirituality, promote any of those things at all.
No.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, but that's just my personal
perspective. I think it's a distortion. I'd like to say it's a distortion. It may not be a distortion, but I would like to think it's a distortion of the original idea of the country, which essentially was, we want to be our own kings, each of us. I don't want a king somewhere else telling me what to do. It's not just about religious freedom. It's about the general idea that I want to be the sovereign over my life.
Uh-huh.
And so we make this unspoken agreement. I'll be sovereign here. You be sovereign over there in your life. You be sovereign over there in your life. If I need more, I might come try to conquer you. But I want to be king of my life. I want to decide, my own destiny, my own, So you've got that along with this parallel riding narrative that are rarely symmetrical about freedom of religion and worshiping God how I want to.
Yeah.
When did you get to make that call? Never in all the races that speak of or address God do the people decide how they want to worship God.
Yeah.
But we took that and ran with it. I want to do this my way, to whatever degree of devotion or self-interest I want to. That's another way of talking about the beginning of America. I want to be king.
Yeah.
At least in my castle.
Yeah.
So that has nothing to do with relationship or attending to my brother's well-being, or really a practiced devotion to God. I want to be free will. Free will is we suck at that. You pick up the paper. We're terrible at it.
Yeah.
But free will, not just free will, but free will directed by my own self-interest as the primary, if not only, point of concern. That's mm-hmm. where it gets ugly. Same with religion. Christianity, Islam, any religion becomes abused when someone decides, how can I use this?
Yeah.
How can I get what I want or get folks to do what I want? Huh. Because, again, I want to somehow justify this back to good. We always want to, no matter what folks end up doing, they tend to want to justify it back to good.
Yeah.
Or to victimhood.
Yeah. Yeah.
I killed all these folks because, you know, this happened to me. But whatever it is. But, yeah, that individuality, the value of, the emphatic value of individuality.
Yeah.
It undoes what every system of spirituality or religion would suggest you're supposed to be doing. Okay, so we're going to wrap this thing for the day. Appreciate you again for being a part of the conversation. We look forward to you contributing to the conversation as you respond. Keelan, give me the email again, the way to get in this conversation with us. What was the email again?
Okay, the email is Synergy. khjh@gmail.com. That's synergykhjh@gmail.com.
And at some point, we may try to get this thing up on Facebook or something, but we'll see. Baby steps. But today we've talked about acknowledging the fact that sometimes there's the question, is this just some subjective thing I'm feeling, or is it this real something other, something deeper, something higher that I'm feeling? And we've talked about how perhaps in the midst of all this, between the physical and the spiritual, in which we sometimes think there's a divide, maybe this idea of consciousness is really that part of us that is conscious, aware, mindful, in the moment enough to kind of bridge between this thing that we think of as unreal with what we typically think of as real, and that it's all a part of reality, all a part of wholeness. But at the end of the day, we've been dealing with the question, this feeling, this gut feeling, this intuition, whatever you want to call it, can you trust it? That's been the real question of the day, I guess. But the question that comes out of that question is this: do you really need someone else to answer that question for you? Can you trust it or not? Do you really need someone else to answer that question for you? We'll leave you with that question. And we look forward to talking to you next time.
Again, peace and blessings, and everybody take care of each other. Signing out.
every part of his screen. Niggas shooting up the club like they